Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Hey, welcome, welcome. And you are listening to Energy Matters on WXOJ 103.3. So today we have a great show. We are here with Michelle Ryan, and she is of Ashtanga Yoga Northampton, which is downtown yoga studio. And welcome, Michelle.
Hi, Caroline. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. So tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you first for having me on. It's great. Who am I? That's
like
a big
question. Biggest spiritual question ever. I know.
I'm just a woman who's been practicing yoga for about 25 years now. Mm. And I began doing Ashtanga about 21 years ago and loved it so much that after about 7 years of doing it, I started to teach it. And I'm still teaching it today. So I've been teaching since 2004.
Wow.
Yeah. So I...
And you used to be in...
I was in Florence Yoga, right in this building on the second floor.
The Valley Free Radio building.
Yes,
here.
The same building. I was here for 5 years from 2009 to 2014, and I moved downtown for a little time, and that's where you and I first met.
We met at Clinic.
At Clinic.
Alternative Medicines. Yep. Absolutely. Yep. You were in the upstairs
It was upstairs
studio.
Space, and I was there for about a year or so, and then we found our space that we're in now, and we changed our name. Actually, I changed my name when I moved downtown to Ashtanga Yoga Northampton. And then
Absolutely.
We moved into the space that we're in now in the Fitzwillie's building right on the second floor.
Yep.
We have this wonderful atrium right outside our door.
Is one of my favorite places.
It's so beautiful. When I saw it, I didn't even have to see the space. I went, oh, this is going to be good.
I like live plants growing in the terrarium. So I don't know if anyone's... So the Fitzwillie's building is a beautiful downtown historic building. Mm-hmm. And there's all these really like... beautiful hardwood floors and
there's a giant atrium that goes from the second floor. You walk up to the second floor and it goes all the way up to the top floor. There's a giant skylight, and at the base of it there's it's the top of Fitzwillie's, actually, which is like a greenhouse.
Yeah,
so we look down on the top of a greenhouse. It's really
and
neat.
Also people eating, so you and can look down and see.
Actually, I
dinner.
Had my first date with my husband in that spot. So that was the other auspicious thing.
That's so cute.
About. Yeah. And of course, he had to point that out to me. He's like, you know, that's where we had our first date.
Right there.
Right there.
Aww,
so
I
anyhow.
Love that.
Yeah. And so it's a really great space. It's got hardwood floors, like you said, and it's big windows, and it's a nice space. Third time's the charm.
Yeah, you know, it's very cozy. I've bounced around. I've had quite a few offices in Northampton alone. So it's sometimes it just takes a little while to root in and find your spot.
So we've been there for 4 years now, and it's a really great community of people.
Very cool.
We're lucky. So.
So tell us a little bit about what is Ashtanga Yoga? Because I know that you guys... I know it's a very specific type of yoga.
It's niche yoga.
Yeah, it's niche yoga. There you go. So tell us a little bit more.
And
about
I teach a niche of the niche, but it's really the way it was meant to be taught. So Ashtanga was a yoga that arose in South India in the city of Mysore, underneath the auspices of the father of modern yoga, Krishnamacharya.
Okay.
And one of his direct students, everybody knows BKS Iyengar, Iyengar Yoga. So he was one direct student. He was actually Krishnamacharya's brother-in-law, believe it or not.
They're all family.
Yeah. And then Pattabhi Joyce was a student of Krishnamacharya for about 7 years. And he developed the system.
When was this all happening?
In the turn of the last century, so like the early 1900s to through the 1920s and 30s.
Okay.
All right. And
so it's not super
ancient. No, it's not incredibly old, and there's great controversy in the yoga world about the lineage of the Ashtanga and lineage of modern postural yoga that Krishnamacharya is really the progenitor of. Like, where did he get it? We could go on this huge like digression right now about, and we won't.
Sure. Well, you know, I feel like when you're in it,
it's
know
really
so much,
interesting.
The philosophy, the history, it's
and
really
a lot
cool.
of it has to do with some things like colonization and kind of appropriating things and taking it and wanting to take it and use it and commodify it as Westerners. And many Indians feel that it's actually not right. And I would agree with them. Mm-hmm. So there is that connection back to India that I really savor and am appreciative of and honoring of, because my teachers studied with Batabi Joyce. And they studied with him, and he had developed this system, and he called it Ashtanga Yoga, which I will say is a little bit of a misnomer, an appropriation on his part, because he wanted to connect the yoga that he was teaching, the asana system that he was teaching, to a deeper lineage, which is going back to the Yoga Sutras, the Ashtanga, the eight aids, or some people call them limbs, the eight limbs of yoga, which include ethical precepts and pranayama and meditation, as well as asana. So he was trying to tie the yoga into that text. Absolutely. To give it legitimacy, which it has legitimacy, but it gives it usually in these yoga world in India anyways, or in the kind of Brahminical world in India, things gain legitimacy through association with an ancient text.
Right.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. So Ashtanga it was started by Batabi Joyce.
Yes.
And he created this system of asanas, which are the yoga postures that, just to kind of bring.
Yeah. And there's several series. So we teach primary series and second series in the Mysore style. So Mysore, India is where Krishnamacharya was teaching. And it's called Mysore style, not because you get sore. Boy, am I sore. Although you can
sure
if you push too hard.
Right.
It's called Mysore because it was this methodology of teaching Ashtanga arose there. And so what happens, if you want me to explain, so a student will come and they'll work one-on-one with the teacher in the room who will show them the basics of the practice in the first class. So how to breathe and how to integrate the breath with the movement, and then how to incorporate that into Surya Namaskar, sun salutations. And then we have the student repeat that a little bit on their own. Mm. And then we assess and ask if they need any help or if anything hurts. And then it's this back and forth between the teacher and the student within a group setting.
Yeah.
Everybody goes through this. You learn a little bit directly from the teacher, and then you try it on your own. So it's teach and then repeat. Teach and repeat. And repetition's really the key.
Yeah.
So,
and I remember the first time that I had witnessed one of your classes, and I say witnessed is because the layout at where my office was at clinic, where the studio was, the studio had a little bit of an open form if you came upstairs. So I say witness because I would very quietly look over my shoulder and see what everyone is doing and try to mind my business, but also be a little nosy. And when you see the class, everybody is in their own rotation.
Yes, everybody's flowing through the sequence, and it's generally the same sequence. It's either primary series or second series, which has been kind of shown to them as it's appropriate for them. We do. I'm not a strictly dogmatic or traditional Ashtanga teacher. If a student has knee issues, back issues, I will help them assess a practice that is accessible for them so that they can facilitate their healing.
Right.
And still do a practice. There's not this like you have to be super young and super fit and super strong. Ashtanga gets this bad rap because it can be very physically challenging, but I actually think it's more mentally challenging because we're asking the student to start to memorize a sequence of postures in order to practice on their own, to develop a self-practice, which is what you want eventually.
I know. And that was, I have to be honest, that was something that really intimidated me when I first started
taking
classes.
It does for everybody. You're not alone.
And I've been doing yoga for so long.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, memorize these really basic postures. And it, like when you, because you have the forms, the sheets for the sequence A and sequence assessments be online? And they're very basic. And
yet to be asked to memorize it, unless you're a professional dancer who has developed the neural pathways to memorize choreography, it's incredibly intimidating.
Yeah.
It's really, and I was not a professional dancer. I was in like, you know, step aerobics in the 80s.
Whoa.
On one side of the room while everybody was on the other side of the room. I mean, they
step aerobics was like the Zumba.
Yeah. I was really pathetic at remembering things, but the repetition of doing the postures over and over again just seems to kind of click. And then eventually you get to know the postures, you make friends with them. Sometimes they can be they can be frenemies for a long time. They can be very challenging, but you make friends with them, you get to know them. And through that process, you actually get to know yourself. So it's a really interesting thing because you just spend a lot of time in quiet because there's no music playing. There's just the breath in the room, in quiet on the mat, surrounded by people who are within their own practice doing the same thing. And you might have started at the same time or you might have started 20 minutes later, but you're still all working together. And it's actually a really beautiful thing to witness, to see everybody working silently.
Yeah.
And it becomes a very, we develop trust with each other. There's a trust that's developed between the teacher and student that's really very special.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And so, and that you also bring up a really good point is that the classes aren't, they start, there's like a window of time.
Yeah. So I'm in there like at 7:30 or 7:15 every morning. And sometimes there's a student in there. You know, we'll give them a key if they really like to get in there early. But, you know, I'll get in there and we'll do the chant as soon as there's a couple of students in there.
So it's a kind of an opening.
Yes, we just do an opening and then they begin their sun salutes. And as people trickle in, they trickle in at their convenience. It's the most convenient yoga class. You're never late.
That's so
You're never, ever late. So if you've ever had that feeling of, oh, my God, I'm gonna miss it. I can't make it. That doesn't happen.
Because the classes run from
7:30 to 10:30.
So that's a three-hour window for people
Drop in. It's a three-hour window.
And how long do people typically spend practicing in
a new student as they're learning? The first student's class would be about 45 minutes to an hour, including rest. And then some folks are really working very deeply into their practice. They're going really far in the series. And so I had a student this morning who was there, and she was there for almost 2 hours. I mean, she did all of primary and then she added second.
That's cool.
So she was working, you know, because she had the time to do it, and she's a very strong practitioner. But some people will come in and just do 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I teach on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We've started doing pranayama and chanting. And so the class ends a little early on Tuesdays, although people will overlap and finish their practice. And then we'll just do some pranayama work and some chanting. So it's...
And so pranayama work
Pranayama is breathing, basically breathing kind of exercises. So different ways of trying to kind of control or kind of sustain the breath.
And so the asanas are the physical postures,
yes.
And the pranayama is the technique. It's just sitting and breathing.
All, you know, within that ashtanga, the eight aids to kind of getting to enlightenment. They're aids towards, again, as like I said, knowing thyself. So you start to control the breath and you can control the mind. And when you can control the mind, you actually can become more deeply discerning, more compassionate, more empathic. You can see things. You can see reality, which is incredibly subjective for all of us.
Of course it is. And it's a lot of fun when you start getting into that.
But you start to see things a lot clearer. The best analogy, and it's not my analogy, it's an Ashtanga teacher from Australia, Dina Kingsburg. She says, you know, doing the practice is like, well, it's like cleaning a window. And we all have this window of perception that we see the world through, and it's covered with dirt. And the dirt is like every triumph and joy and trauma and sorrow just clouds that window and conditions us to see the world a certain way. And the practice, the repetition of just doing the postures and the breathing over and over again is dipping a sponge in a bucket and wiping the window. And you keep wiping and wiping and wiping. And there's some spots you can't get out. You have to wipe for a long time.
You get your nail and kind of scrape
at it. But then all of a sudden it's cleared and you can see things much more clearly. You see yourself, you see the world much more clearly. And it gives you an opportunity to have a little bit more patience and empathy, I've found. I'm not always successful at it.
Yeah. but that's, you know, where I feel like, you know, everybody in their own way is looking for a place of joy and happiness, whether we're consciously aware of it or not.
Yes.
And, you know, when we take deliberate mindful moments, whether it's through yoga, through the asanas or pranayama or any of those eight limbs of yoga, that maybe that's our path.
It is. And it could be just, and meditation is one of those limbs. It's one of the, it's the seventh limb before you reach samadhi, which is moksha, nirvana, whatever, enlightenment.
Yeah.
So it's really preparing us to actually become our truest selves. So that's basically, but that sounds really highfalutin. You can also just come and you can very much get a wonderful physical workout that will enliven you, make you feel both at peace and also totally energized at the end of it. And people generally leave saying, oh, I'm so glad I did that. Mm. I feel so much better.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. Just even just today, just feeling better, you know?
And what's also nice about it too is the one-on-one, even though it's like private yoga within a group setting. So everybody's gone through the process of learning the series one-on-one with the teacher. And it's myself and Alicia's another one. You know Alicia.
Yeah.
She's the other Mysore teacher. So everybody goes through the process of learning one-on-one with the teachers. And then we give them more and more autonomy. And that's kind of a beautiful thing, to have this autonomy so that you can express the practice as you need to. Yeah. So there's no like, okay, we're all going to do this all at the same time. And there's less comparison. So you don't feel like, oh, that person, they're so flexible. And you know, you're just on your mat doing your thing for your hour and a half or longer. Yeah.
Cool.
And you get one-on-one instruction when you need it. So say something hurts, you can say, this hurts, it doesn't feel right. And we're both trained. We're all trained. All the teachers at Ashtanga Yoga Northampton are trained to assess and help the student develop something that will not hurt them, but that they can do safely.
Cool. So, Ashtanga Yoga Northampton, we were kind of talking a little bit about what Ashtanga is, how it differs a little bit from a lot of other studio or other techniques of yoga, their yoga practices. And your studio itself is set up a little differently.
Yeah, so I changed the, when I ran Florence Yoga here, I was the sole owner.
Yeah, it was a one woman show there.
One woman show, but there was teachers that worked with me and you know, I'd pay them and it was really stressful. It was incredibly stressful to be the sole proprietor and run the studio.
Why was it so stressful for you?
It's a lot of administrative work. I'm sure if there's other yoga studio owners listening to me right now, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a lot of just stuff that you have to do, managing the website, keeping the studio clean, keeping the props clean, managing the schedule, promotion, promotion. It's never ending. And, you know, making the rent, you know, paying the teachers, you know, it's like running a yoga studio is like throwing a giant party every day and inviting the world to show up and hoping that people show up. You create a space, you hold the space, you're there. And it's really important not to become codependent on your students for your sense of self as a teacher.
Right.
It's really like, you know, because very soon you'll be like, well, nobody's here, I must suck. It's a demoralizing thing, but it's really just like there's so many choices for people. So, you know, it goes to my idea of being of service to people.
Okay.
Seeing the students as not dollar signs walking through the door. They are people that I am, and our teachers are there to serve in the best way that they can. So, and I also wanted to serve the teachers as well, because for the teachers, there's no sense of ownership when there's a sole owner.
Right.
You know, they're excited about their gig at first, and then all of a sudden they see how hard it is to create kind of a sustainable yoga class.
Absolutely.
And
that gets folded in. A lot of yoga instructors teach at multiple studios and have to do the business stuff also because they have the Instagram and the Facebook, and there's, every instructor also is building their own following as well.
And so what will happen is they'll just show up and teach and then go, and there's no sense of collegiality, and there's even a sense of almost competition with the other teachers, you know, who's getting the most students, and it's hard. And I felt kind of at a loss as to how to do this. And my friend Georgianne, who's taught with me at Florence Yoga and now teaches the yin yoga, the beautiful yin yoga classes at Ashtanga Yoga North Hampton.
Classes are lovely.
They're so great. Georgianne's just an amazing teacher and an amazing yoga practitioner in person and a great friend. She's like, well, I'm like, I don't want to run a yoga studio again. We were in clinic and things were shifting. And she's like, well, I don't know. I remember going to some studio out in Michigan or Minneapolis and they were a collective or a cooperative. And I was like, what's the name of it? And she told me, and of course they had zero information on their website of how they set it up. Oh. So I was
behind the scenes for them.
Yeah. And I just thought about it on a 3-hour car ride up to Burlington to visit my oldest daughter and then talk to her about it. And then I thought about it on the 3-hour car ride back down from Burlington, then, you know, a couple of days later, and came up with just this idea of all of the teachers working together collectively to share the space, share the teaching duties, share the administrative duties, and share the cost of running the space. Mm. So everybody contributes towards the rent based on a ratio of how many classes they teach.
Okay.
And then they all have administrative jobs, whether it's doing the laundry or bringing in the flowers or doing the books or updating the website or doing promotion or shaking out the rugs once a month. I mean, it's just so everybody has something that they do collect and that helps the collective. And of course, we all clean it after we're done teaching and all there's that.
Basic
so there's more collegiality. There's more of a sense of ownership because they get also 100% of the income from their classes. I don't take any of the income from their classes. I'm not the sole owner anymore. They own it. We own it together. So we share. And we share the students as well. So all the students, it's not like my students. These are my students
right.
coming to my classes. The students that come purchase a class card from Ashtanga Yoga Northampton and they take classes with all of us. So there's this sense of, again, like I talked about the codependency thing. It's like, they're not my students anymore. They can't be. They're human beings. You don't own anything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
They're there and you're there to serve them too. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the MO behind what we do. It's a service oriented, but also collegial, supportive, respectful of each other. And it's good for me.
So because you guys are so entwined, how do you vet teachers who also want to be owners and also,
yeah.
because sometimes so, there's teachers who are just happy to come in, open the door.
And we do sublease. Yeah.
Up.
We do have a sublease option.
Yeah.
So those people pay more. They don't want to, but they also don't get to share in the students. So they're their own thing. And we've had many teachers that have subleased from us and used the space as subleasers. They come in, they teach, they have their own students, they have their own book that they, you know, and their own class cards, and we have nothing to do, but they, you know, they'll have a flyer up and
sure,
they use the
yeah.
space and they advertise on their own. So we've had several teachers that have done that.
So how do you find the right mix of people who want to be part of that community? How do you find the teachers who also want to be owners?
Yeah.
Because I feel like when people are invested in a community, like what brings them
yeah,
to stay
they were
there.
Students first. I mean, Georgianne and I were together first here in Florence. And when we moved to clinic, she was teaching classes at clinic as well. And then I did an immersion program because I don't believe in teacher trainings and I won't get into that, but I don't believe in teacher trainings. And I don't knock anybody for doing them, but I just don't feel it's the best way to learn how to teach yoga. So I did an immersion program and an apprenticeship program.
Okay.
So I believe in apprenticeship. They were merit-based free apprenticeships. They paid for the immersion program, but they didn't pay to be my apprentice.
Hmm.
And they became apprentices and co-taught with me. And then they ended up taking over teaching slots themselves. And really it's been kind of neat to be able to kind of mentor as well. And I'm not going to say I'm a great mentor. I've had many failures in my apprentices who are now my colleagues have been very patient with me.
Well, we learned with
you know,
with
I
students.
Never did it before, but it was, you know, it's been a great thing and I'm really appreciative. And, you know, it's two women who were apprentices have moved and or left this one moved recently and one left the studio a couple years ago because she felt she couldn't teach anymore. And so that's sad. And people come and go. And now we have another student who just, he's been a student of ours for about 3 years now. And he's done my immersion program that I just recently had. And he's, I don't have an apprenticeship program right now, but he's doing a teacher training with a good friend of mine. And that's Bob Shea. And he's been rolled into our cooperative now.
Cool.
So it's generally, they just, we just know, we know that it's this student, they've been practicing with us. They're part of the community already. They've invested in the community with their time and their effort, and they've kind of invested the space with their energy. So
that's really cool. They surface to the top.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So in that same vein, because you are a collective, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Michelle Ryan of Ashtanga Yoga in Northampton.
It's okay. Many people say it many different ways. Ashtanga.
Ashtyoga. Ashtanga Yoga in Northampton.
Ashtanga, yeah. It means eight limbs or eight aids. Eight aids.
Great.
Yeah.
So in that same vein, as a collective, because everybody is an equal player and has shared administrative duties and all of this, how do you deal with any kind of discord or differing of opinions? Because that's kind of the dark side of, or the shadowy
side. We're kind of
side.
Like a true democracy. I mean, it's we really try to communicate with each other. Like really, like we had a hard time. I personally had a hard time this spring because everybody else got incredibly busy in their lives. Really, really busy in their lives. Some people were away and I was kind of felt like I was left kind of holding the whole bag, and it was hard, and I had to communicate that.
Do
and
you
also
hold like a staff meeting?
We have meetings probably every couple of months. We also have a really good like email communication. We see each other. I'll go practice with Alicia or Georgianne. We talk, so we see each other in each other's classes. They come to my classes and take my class. We talk. So we stay in touch with each other that way every week. So
there's four of you, right?
There is myself, and then Alicia Hunter, and then Georgianne Christek, and Bob Shea now. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And then there's several people that are also students that will sub for us and that are teachers in their own right.
Fabulous.
But they're not folded into the collective as well. So that's Anastasia Esquizalan and Jade Jump.
So and when you over the summer, when you kind of felt like everybody got really busy, and how did so you sit everybody down, or you kind of all come together?
Yeah, we
say?
Just like say okay, and of course trying to get yoga teachers together is like herding cats, so yeah. It's really hard. But we all managed. Okay, everybody's like, we're available this time, and we'll just do it, and we'll just meet.
And you just talk it out.
We just talk it out, and we have kind of a loose agenda, and we just kind of go over things, and basically everybody has hopefully feels the freedom to speak their truth, and. Collectively communicate. But it's really about kind of sustaining and keeping the relationships as kind of true as you possibly can through communication, really communicating and being honest with each other and checking in with each other. Like, are you happy? Is this still making you happy? Are you happy with this? That's really kind of one of these things that I make sure I ask.
And that takes, I think, some guts to ask the question and also be present with yourself to answer it.
Yeah. And to take just, criticism if I, yes, yeah. Absolutely. And also to be self, again, knowing myself and knowing where my flaws are and seeing truly discerning, that wasn't skillful, Michelle. Or how can I be more skillful here?
Right.
So that this works better for all of us. And also letting go of control, which is hard for myself, but I know it's hard for everybody. And it's been a good thing to be able to let go of some control.
Yeah.
It does. But I'm still not great at it.
it's very liberating when you are able to say, okay, things are going to change. And, that's really what I think holding on to control is, not wanting things to change.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's like letting it be organic and flowing open and letting people find their voice. I don't tell them what to teach. I don't tell them how to teach. They teach their classes as it arises from them, and they teach what they want to teach versus, well, I think this would, you should be teaching this course this time. So they, sometimes I have had ideas that have been flown and I'm like, just from my own experience of having taught for a long time, it's probably, I'll say, well, let's think about this because it might not fly, but we'll try it. And
yeah.
I always try to leave things open for people to try things. I am the founder. I am the one who runs the studio, because I'm there the most. I'm there five mornings a week. So,
absolutely.
And so, but they could do, they do fine without me too. I go away and it runs just as smoothly.
Yeah.
And they're all wonderful teachers in their own right and
that's
great
lovely.
Leaders.
That's lovely. Yeah. Because I do know that you have traveled back to India, to Mysore.
Yeah. Well, I haven't gone to Mysore. I'm going to Mysore in February, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah. But I've gone to North India twice. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And so you've brought the practices that you've learned there,
yeah,
as well as through your training.
I do a lot of, I don't know if I could call myself a yoga scholar, but I do study Sanskrit and the texts, the ancient texts, the Yoga Sutras and the Mahabharata, and which has the Bhagavad Gita rolled into it, and the Ramayana. And I've been studying non-dual Shaiva, Kashmir Shaivism lately, which is a really interesting tantric study. And
cool.
So I really get a big kick out of that. And Advaita Vedanta, non-dualist. I'm a non-dualist.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds great. I don't know what a non-dualist is. What is a non-dualist?
It's all one. It's all one. We are all just individual manifestations of pure love and consciousness, which is just big, one big thing.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Me too.
You
I
are.
I feel the same
I
way.
I am he and you are he and you are me and we are all together.
Jana. So, and you know, I do think that when we travel and when we study and when we have our own independent interests, it improves the group and it changes the dynamics and it grows. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, that whole kind of letting go thing within the collective. When you take those trips and you come back and you study,
yeah,
it just, it's like this thing just keeps growing,
yeah,
and pulsing. And
yeah,
it's a cool dynamic.
Yeah.
It's a really cool.
And India is really awesome.
And it takes a, yeah, I want to just give you guys props because I've been part of a collective before and we had our challenges and it was short lived and it was lovely. And
it just takes a lot of communication
and commitment,
deep gratitude towards each other and respect for each other. And not saying that can't happen, but it's work. It's like any relationship.
It's like a band.
It's like a band. Yeah.
It's like you're each other's best friends.
One
and
love.
You spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
So we're going to take one more short break and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more specifically about the offerings that you have, because you guys have a lot of cool stuff, including book clubs and cleanses. And I want to talk a little bit more about what you guys are actually.
We're in the midst of the cleanse right now.
Kind of
there's
cool
about
stuff?
16 of us doing a cleanse.
Oh, that's
so,
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing there, because I know you guys have a lot of interesting offerings. I saw on your website that you have a book club.
Yeah.
You've got led classes, which are more of the formal
style. It's basically like a Western yoga class in terms of you have to show up at a particular time and it goes for a particular length of time and it ends at a particular time. So it's different from the Mysore style classes that way.
And
the teacher, the half led is really good for beginners classes. That's Monday nights. Although a beginner can go to any Mysore class and any Yin class. The only class we would not suggest raw beginners go to is the Sunday morning lead full primary, which is rather rigorous. And a lot of times Ashtanga gets a bad rap because they'll have a lone full lead primary on a schedule of a studio that teaches many different kinds of yoga and somebody will take it and they'll get their bottom kicked and feel very sore the next day. And then they're like, oh, that Ashtanga, it's so hard. We have this reputation of being the Marines of yoga.
Yeah.
But it's really better to learn it very slowly and gradually. So the Mysore classes are designed to do that. And we also have intro classes. Alicia will be doing an intro class in November. We just haven't settled on the dates, but that'll be on Tuesdays.
Cool.
And then we have the Yin Yoga, which is any level. Anybody can do that. Doesn't matter age, anything. Anybody can do any of the classes except for the 9 a.m. on Sunday. And then we have the book club that we're doing. Yeah, we're reading this really great book, Balance Your Hormones, Balance Your Life by Dr. Claudia Welch, who's a doctor of Chinese medicine. And that's really kind of a fun thing. We've done book clubs before. We've had movie night where we've shown kind of fun little movies. We showed a movie called Sita Sings the Blues, which was based on the Ramayana, which was kind of a really fun thing to see. And we've seen a couple of documentaries. And then right now we're in the midst of a cleanse, where we're doing an Ayurvedic cleanse. Okay. And it's basically just eating, I call it the Indian version of rice and beans.
Yeah.
It's khichdi. So we eat khichdi that's, you know, spiced lovely with ginger and different kinds of cumin and coriander and all these great spices. And then you have that for a week, a mono diet with lots of vegetables and lots of ghee if you're, or coconut oil if you're vegan. And then,
well, we had Hannah Jacobson Hardy on our show a couple weeks ago, and she is the
all about ghee.
She's
I bet
the full moon ghee.
Yeah, and that's the ghee that I'm using for my cleanse, and I love having it.
Hers
in everything.
Extra special, but yeah, she was telling us all about ghee a couple weeks
ago.
Ghee
is so wonderful for you. So it's internal oleation. So what happens is the ghee binds with the toxins in the body. Like fat, well, your toxins are stored in your fat. So the ghee binds with the toxins in the digestive system, and then it pulls it out of your system at the end when you're done with your cleanse. So it's really healthy.
It goes out the other side.
Out the other side. We don't want that in us. And then you feel really, I'm on like day, well, tomorrow's day 5. So I'm on day 4. I feel great.
So, well, just to back up a step, ghee, for anyone listening out there, is it's clarified
butter. Yep.
They take, Hannah was explaining that they basically take all the milk solids out. Mm-hmm. And she said, I think there's a little bit of the casein still in there, mm-hmm. but it's clarified butter. So they take all the solids out. So it's a lot gentler on your system.
Yeah.
But it's really, really good for, like you said, detoxing, pulling all that stuff out of your body.
All the sludge out of your body.
Yeah.
The ama, they call it in Ayurveda.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the cleanse that you guys are doing, to recap a little bit about what you just said, it's the rice and beans of Indian rice and beans.
Yes.
And it's mung beans?
It's mung beans, yes.
And
and basmati rice, white basmati rice. And then you just cook it down so it's very soft.
Okay.
And it's like, you know, kind of like beyond risotto soft. You know, it's got this, you can make it as soupy or as thick
like
as you
porridge
want.
Porridge.
It's like porridge. And then you just add vegetables to it. You know, you can add pretty much what you want.
Spices
I tempered
some
ghee with like some more spices and drizzled that on the top. And it's really good. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
But it's what you find is that you get like used to having the wonderful abundance of American choice, which I don't know if that's really a good thing, but you get a little bored with it because it's the same thing. But that's part of the cleanse, is like observing that and seeing what you're attached to.
Yeah. So you eat that for how many days?
I'm doing 5 days this time, but some people are doing 7 days.
And
yeah.
It's 3 meals or
it's
is it
three
one
meals,
meal?
But you know what? I probably have like one or two meals, like 2 meals a day. Like,
feels good,
you know,
for your body.
And in the morning I make a morning khichdi, which is actually done with like chai spices.
Oh, that's yummy.
So, yeah, it's really good. It's really good with
that
the chai
sounds
spices.
Sounds like a good morning breakfast.
Yes. Yeah. So I've been having like 2 to 3 a day. Yeah.
So what do you
By the
notice?
End, I just have a lot of energy. I don't have, I don't drink coffee anyways, but I don't, you know, that's usually the hardest part for people is skipping the coffee. There's detox from that and withdrawal. But after that, you just feel very clear and you feel light, and it's easy to do asana and it's easy to do pranayama, and it just, you just get the toxins out of your body.
I love how you make it sound so casual. Like, yeah, you just stop drinking coffee and you just detox. And
it wasn't an issue for me because I don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
I drink tea, and it was like, I can just have herbal tea. And
in my mind, I was just like, girl.
Yeah. A lot of people I lost them. I lost them when they said, no coffee. Forget that. Yeah.
Maybe just a couple sips.
Yeah.
Maybe just like one espresso. Just one.
Yeah. So, no, it's really, actually dandelion is a great alternative.
That's true.
Nourish makes this really good dandy mocha, which tastes just like coffee, like a mocha. Chino.
Oh, Nourish Cafe.
Nourish, yeah. Okay. Yeah, give props to Nourish too.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Give that a try in the afternoon.
If you're trying to get off coffee, it's a good alternative.
Nice.
So.
It's very tasty. It has a similar bitter
Yeah,
quality.
It tastes good. Yeah.
Very cool. So I know you guys, and so this is something that I wanted to chat a little bit about too, is that I saw on your website that you used to honor these Ashtanga moon days.
Oh, yeah.
And that you don't anymore.
We don't anymore. We did for a long time.
Tell us a little bit about the moon days.
So
are
the moon days arose.
Ashtanga.
The moon days arose in India. Those of the Brahmin caste, Brahminical Indians, actually do daily puja. And I'm sure other castes do as well, but I just know Patabi Joyce was a Shmirta Brahmin, and he had these pujas that he had to do every day, just rituals, chanting and you know, fire ceremonies and all these.
Because he was essentially like a Hindu monk.
Well, no, not a monk. No, he was a householder. He had a wife and children.
Okay.
But he had to do this every day. It was part of his upbringing. It was religious practices. And on moon days, on new and full moon, they were particularly long. They took a longer period of time. So it was, and also he really loved to teach. He'd teach like 7 days a week. And so his family first said, well, can you just like tone it down? And so then he stopped teaching on Saturdays, and then he stopped teaching on moon days and new and full moon. And so he'd have more time to do his, so that's part of it. And it became this apocryphal thing within the Ashtanga culture, like, oh, we're mostly water, so you shouldn't practice on new moon and full moon because the moon affects your body and you can get hurt a little bit more easily. It's really actually not so much for the practitioners, but more for the teachers. I used to teach on new moon all the time in my old studio upstairs, and I was teaching and I hurt myself teaching on new moon twice in 6 months. So it's just, so I watch myself on new moon. We don't give any new postures. We just kind of take it easy as a teacher. I just kind of move in there kind of holding the space on new moon. But I also found that students were just losing their mojo. It's too, you know, if I come on Tuesdays I go Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and all of a sudden I miss two Saturdays or I miss two Tuesdays out of my month. It's like, you've kind of broken my habit of coming. And so that for them is, it's hard for the student, the Western student. And
it's a different time structure.
It is a different time structure. We're not Brahmins, although I highly and deeply honor and respect the lineage, the Hindu lineage, and don't want to appropriate anything. It just found that was one reason it was hard for the students to take the days off, because we don't have daily practitioners. There's, in the Ashtanga system, you're supposed to practice 6 days a week. I probably have maybe two students that practice 6 days a week within the studio.
Mm. I did see that you kind of recommend practicing between 3 to 6 classes, classes per week to experience what you call like a transformation.
Yeah.
What kind of transformation are you?
So what happens is if you're just coming once a week, you're going to feel pretty good. You'll feel good for like the next day. And then your body just is going to go back to its regular old mode of like maybe not feeling that great, a little tense and stiff. And then next week you go on one Tuesday a week. You just kind of lose the benefit, whereas the benefit accrues if you create a habit out of it and you remember the sequence more, and you actually get more benefit mentally, emotionally, and physically if you just become a consistent practitioner. So 3 days a week we've found is the bare minimum that you can come. Really, if you're going to try to become a dedicated Ashtanga practitioner who knows the sequence, just because our neural synapses cannot develop a memory, can't memorize choreographies, can't memorize these asana sequences unless we come at least 3 times a week. And it doesn't have to all be Mysore classes. You can do the leg classes too, because it's the same postures, but and the same sequences. But you really need to kind of come consistently. Not for us. It's not, we're going to be there holding the space whether you come or not. It's for you. Yeah. You come for you. If you really want to change and feel that something's not right in your life, you don't feel good physically or mentally or emotionally, it really does change you if you start coming. And people, that's why I'm open at 7:30. People are like, I've started my day and now I can do my day because I've accomplished this and I feel better in myself. I'm in my body.
Yeah.
I'm not torn in two thinking, oh, I got to do this later. I've actually self-cared for an hour and 15 minutes or so. Yeah. And then I can accomplish so much more. And that's really establishing that habit. The asana practice is a sadhana. It's a practice. Mm. And you do it consistently. And just, I don't know, there's this alchemy that happens. Everything shifts.
How, in your personal journey, I know you said you've been practicing for 25 years and 21 within Ashtanga.
Yeah.
How have you noticed this daily practice in your life?
Oh God, that's a huge question. You know, when I first started doing Ashtanga in particular, I had 3 little children under the age of 6.
Wow.
My son was 4 months
that's
old.
A lot
he was in the
around.
Studio today too. My 21-year-old son was in there today practicing. And, you know, I just was like, I'm a very nurturing person. So I had given everything to these 3 children and to my husband and had nothing left for myself. And I had done some yoga before that. And I remembered like, oh, I really felt good with the yoga. It just was like, got me, It was for me only. It wasn't for anybody else. And so I looked it up in the Yellow Pages. This is how long. There was no internet. And there was a yoga studio about 5 minutes from my house. I lived in Springfield. And there was Heart Song Yoga. My friend Sheila Michael Hayes still there running this beautiful yoga center. And I went there and did a Kripalu style class. And then a couple months later, she's like, oh, we have this Ashtanga, this power yoga is starting. Come. And I never stopped after that. So yeah, my son was like 4 months old. He was not that old. I can't believe I said to myself, I have to do this. If I don't do this, I lose me. And so it helped me. I said this earlier, like you find yourself through it. You find your authentic self. Yeah. And again, physically I was in really bad shape. Really bad shape. I had had three children. I mean, I had a C-section. I had diastasis recti, which is the splitting of your abdominal.
Oh boy!
You know, I had everything. I was, you know, overweight and just really weak. And it just helped me. You know, I'm a much more empowered person mentally, physically, and emotionally from doing it and being consistent about it. And I made a decision like, this is the one thing I'm going to try to do. I've tried aerobics and I've tried working out and running and biking and it never clicked, but I found this and it clicked.
Oh, I love that. That's such a good story.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, it's funny because I have just the 3 or 4 years that I've known you, I think about maybe somewhere around there. I feel like I've only known you as an athletic, very driven, focused person. So it's interesting to hear that 21 years ago,
different body and also kind of a bit of a Stepford wife, too, I might say. And it actually broke me out of that kind of codependency that so many of us kind of don't realize until we actually get empowered. Mm. So it empowered me, too.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We're just closing up for today. You've been listening to Energy Matters, and we've been chatting with Michelle Ryan of Ashtanga Yoga Northampton. Please go check out her website. It's ashtangayoganorthampton.com. Her studio is right downtown. And yeah, you're doing really cool things over there.
Thanks, Caroline. This was really fun.
Yeah.
It was great to talk to you.
And you as well.
Yeah, it's always good to see you.
Have a great afternoon and evening, everyone. Take care.